I'm Jason from the Digital Soup Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. It's Earth 2's favorite newspaper. I'm the chief editor today. My name is SP. And your reporters for this episode number 185 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Why destroy a city when you can take it over?
$1 billion. And Michelle.
I put my faith in data, information. Ones and zeros never lie.
You would get along great with Athena, I guess. Everyone, this podcast is recorded on Sunday, February 11th, 2018, live via geeks.live. Remember, our newspaper is full of spoilers, facts, and speculation about Arrow and the rest of the DC TV movie and comic universe, but we have no Olympic spoilers.
Yeah, those are already on the internet for you guys. But today, we'll be discussing Arrow as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could and very well will impact future episodes of shows like Arrow, but also the rest of the greater universe, such as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, Constantine, and God knows what else they're going to add someday.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
A ton of geeky content available at GunnaGeek.com. We'll have more on that later. In the meantime, Michelle, I think it's time to break down the episode.
Yes. This episode is called The Devil's Greatest Trick. It's Season 6, Episode 13. It aired Thursday, February 8, 2018, directed by J.J. Macaro. He is a former stunt coordinator, so I'm sure Bam Bam is maybe a proud papa seeing another stunt coordinator becoming a director. JJ has directed 2 episodes of Arrow and 3 episodes of Flash. Written by Sarah Tarkoff, who's written 12 episodes of Arrow, and Emilio Ortega Aldrich, who's done 11 episodes of Arrow. This is the first episode all three have worked on together. Sarah and Emilio also wrote Reversal together.
Wow, that's amazing because all these names are familiar to me, so it's just amazing that this is the first time they've worked together. So moving on into the ratings for last week, we're going to break down all the ratings for all the DC shows the week that this episode of Arrow aired, and we're going to start with Monday, February 5th, 2018, with Supergirl's third season, 13th episode, Both Sides Now, which had a live rating of 2.12. Moving on to Tuesday, the 6th of February, 2018, Flash with Season 4, Episode 13, True Colors, had a live rating of 2.28, which is a little on the low side for Flash, but still well above that, too. By the way, Supergirl's above 2 rating is good for that. Following Flash on Tuesday, the 6th of February, Black Lightning's 4th episode ever got a live rating, which was down from the previous 2 weeks, of 1.88, with the episode titled Black Jesus. So that was Monday and Tuesday shows, the 3 CW comic book shows preceding Arrow this week. So Thursday, the 8th of February, 2018, Arrow with its 6th season, 13th episode titled The Devil's Greatest Tricks got a rating of, this is no trick, folks. Matter of fact, they could have used some tricks, 1.30, which is a little low. And Michelle has put some numbers in to compare. So Supernatural's average rating is 1.79. And with this week's Arrow episode, its average is 1.42, I believe, on the season, Michelle, right? 6th season average is 1.42. And the Supernatural average this year is 1.79, which is what, their 12th season?
13th
season. So yeah, Arrow at less than half the seasons is getting a little bit less on the average. And then back over to Black Lightning on Tuesday night, Legends of Tomorrow, which will be coming back this week, just in a couple of days as we're recording this, their average of their episode ratings of the season to date is 1.67. So we've talked a lot about this. These shows that get under 1.8, I worry about them. No, there has been no talk or no announcements on which shows have been renewed or not yet for next year. So we'll stay tuned for that. We'll, of course, have them in the news section when it comes out. But yeah, I'm worried about Arrow. We've said it before. And I'd also be worried about other shows like Legends of Tomorrow, which is, it's a bummer because I even heard Neil say it was his favorite of the year.
It's my favorite too. I can't wait till it comes back. It comes back Monday in Supergirl's time slot, 8 p.m. And it will run straight through April 6th, somewhere in there, because Supergirl comes back, I think, the 12th of April.
Wow. April. Wow. That just seems so far. It's February and we're talking April for the next episode of Supergirl. I'm going to forget the storyline at that point in time.
That was honestly my concern there. And I went, you know, this wasn't really the greatest of cliffhangers to leave us on for going forward. So I hope they know what they're doing here, but it sounds to me like what we were worried about is the fact they've got too much stuff to try and cram in there. So they're sacrificing things in the short term.
Yeah, really worried about it. But we'll report on the numbers as they come out, and we'll see how this hiatus has done this inserting Legends of Tomorrow. And CW has come out and said that they are only going to do 4 comic book shows at any one time. So we're hamstrung by that. And you can't add, you got more than 4 shows on the network right now, and you can't add another one on a weekly schedule if you're going to bust that 4. So yeah, we're at the whims of CW, folks, and the ratings to a certain point. Because if the ratings did say we were getting like 5 and 6 on all 4 shows, then they'd say, yeah, sure, we'll add a 5th, but they're not. All right, let's get into the specifics of the episode, Michelle. Can you start us out with the overall theme?
Yeah, this is called The Devil's Greatest Trick, and I have been talking about who is the big bad, who is the video game boss after you defeat the one that you think is the boss. And we finally find out who's actually the big bad, because that is the trick. The person we think, you know, is the bad guy, Caden James, turns himself in. We'll talk more about that. But then we find out that lo and behold, someone's been behind the scenes doing some stuff. And ta-da! We now know who the big bad is for the next, what, 12 episodes? 11?
Something like, well, yeah, about 9 or 10 episodes, yeah. So we talked a little bit about this last week. We speculated, Michelle, you and I, on who the big bad was going to be. I even mentioned Ra's al Ghul would be a good name to throw in there. We did talk about Dragon. We did talk about how Kirk was just too good of an actor not to use. So this is not surprising, but I do have a little beef with this in that they didn't set it up good enough. Like all of a sudden Dragon comes out of nowhere and he's supposed to be the puppeteer that has been pulling the strings for almost 2 years now. It's like, really? You didn't show us any of that. He was like a B team player on the low rent in Justice League. And then all of a sudden he's like the big guy that's been pulling everybody's strings. I believe it because Kirk is such a good actor and we've been waiting for this, but if you didn't know, if you weren't aware of his previous work or anything, I don't know if his screen gravitas actually pulled this off for the new viewer. I don't know. What do you think?
So I think it was a bit of a tough sell. I mean, much like you guys, I went, he's pretty much the only one out of the 3 suspects I think it would be. What I envision they're probably going to do is they've been playing around a lot with flashbacks this year, being from different characters' perspectives. We just had it from Caden James' perspective this week. We did Deathstroke ones in the past, things like that. I wouldn't be shocked if in one of our future next 2 or 3 episodes, it's all a flashback as to how Dragon was setting things up, pulling the strings behind town that kind of shows the rise of his power.
Because it would have been great to get tidbits of that along the way and not just, boom, he's the big bad guy out of nowhere. It was a really tough sell for me, as you said, Chris. And I do have a beef about Caden James flashbacks, too, by the way.
Yeah, speaking of flashbacks, if we get a dragon flashback episodes, well, it's going to have to, well, fit the current trend, because last week we had a flashback about Vince. Vince died. We had a flashback about Caden James this week, and Caden died. So now if we're going to get a Richard Dragon flashback, maybe that will be the episode he gets killed, if they follow this trend.
Right. So there's that. But I need to go back. So if you have watched Michael Emerson, who's the actor who plays Caden James, if you watched him on Person of Interest, they did flashbacks all over the place with that series. It's very reminiscent of the first five seasons of Starling Tribune, by the way. Caden James's flashbacks, or Michael Emerson's flashbacks in Person of Interest, were so moving because you were able to build up the character over time, just like Oliver Queen's has been the last 5 years. This flashback in this singular episode fell a little flat to me because there was no build up to it. It was just, okay, we're going to tell you the whole story in a little bit of this episode of what happened between him actually running Helix and actually getting caught and his son dying and so on and so forth. So I'm glad to have that information, but it would have been great to have some of that teased out over time, maybe show interrogation scenes, because we know Argus had him. So show interrogation scenes with him along the way, little tidbits of information that come out to Argus along the way. That would have been cool. That would have fed into these episodes. They could have done a similar thing, whatever that's going to be, with Dragon, and they just didn't. So Michael Emerson, to me, is a poster child for these flashback scenes because he did so well with Person of Interest. And then this episode, it was like, eh.
Well, we can only do what the writers give. And here's the thing. TV is a writer's medium. And the writers have decided to do what they have done. And we will discuss more of that. One of the things that they did do is they did give us some fight scenes. And I think they were directed very well. So, Chris, why don't you take us through Dinah's first encounter with Black Siren?
This is pretty brutal. I mean, we all know Dinah's not very happy after last week. So she pretty much breaks her way into this compound where she thinks she might be hiding and is just knocking the hell out of all the henchmen there, beating them with her bow staff, screaming at them, throwing them around, threatening them, saying she wants to figure out where she is. It's pretty great. And that all leads up to her taking on Black Siren later in the episode. Lots of kicks, lots of fighting, and then I don't know why Quentin decides to get involved. It's still my biggest WTF moment on this episode when he constantly keeps trying to save this woman who's not his daughter.
I have a beef with that too, so we'll get to that later.
Quentin provides a distraction there that kind of stops Laurel from getting taken down, and then that leads to Ollie coming in and using his lasso, bow, and arrow trick on the both of them to scold them and say, we need her to save the city.
That was great. He not only lassos the Black Siren in, but he gets Dinah in there as well as Black Canary. That was great seeing both of them tied up to posts.
I think he had to, because Black Canary, was going to kill Black Siren if given the chance. And if you don't stop her, you basically have disabled the opponent and made it much easier for her to die.
Yeah, I thought it was a really cool fight. It's the fight we've been wanting all season. I don't think we needed to have Vince die and to have Dinah go through, I don't know, man pain or woman pain or whatever to make her want to fight Black Siren. What I thought was interesting is during these encounters, Renee and Curtis are disappointed in Dinah. Curtis actually says at one point, you know, hey, killing is bad, so you shouldn't be doing this. And now Renee is like, you know, there's a bomb that's going to destroy the city. And all I kept thinking was, it's like, hello, last week's episode was all about trying to stop the bomb. And you two decided to go have her back. But now you don't have her back. And yes, we got some awesome fight scenes. But dudes, you could have help prevent the bomb. And this is the part of the inconsistent writing. It's like last week they had her back and let's do this. And this week they're like, no, we need to actually do something about the bomb.
Okay, I got two beefs here. The first beef is the fact that We've been talking about the last couple of episodes, how that Star City is continually in trouble. And I'm now speculating that there are tens of thousands of people that are left in the city. I mean, like total population, who knows if they're still alive or not, but you're talking tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, not millions. You're down to a city of tens of thousands. Still, it's tens of thousands of people. I think they rank, and especially for Dinah as a police officer, they should rank over any personal beef that she has. So a little out of character for her. I'm still having trouble with that vengeance motive when the city itself is at trouble. So I think that needs to be reconciled at some point in time. Also, the whole thing about the trio, the Crybaby League, whatever we've decided to call them, the whole issue with those three, I think it's just absolutely stupid at this point in time. This doesn't change anything, Hoss. Yeah, it should. And if not, you're the dumbass.
There's a lot of things that don't make sense right now that I'm hoping they start to pull back together or realize that, hey, maybe we're going down the wrong path. And the split of the teams doesn't seem like they're going to fix until, spoiler alert, we got a little preview for what coming back is the fight of the two Arrow teams. So I think we have to wait until that happens before they try and resolve anything. And I'm just kind of sitting here going, why do they have to fight? Can't they just get over themselves and team back up?
I do have a question to you guys. Did they change the CGI for the Canary Cry graphic this episode? It seemed a little bit different than it has been.
Not that I remember, but I can go back and look again.
It's like you could really see it more. I think they wanted to have it a little bit more comic booky to really show when it hits something, there's damage. Because it almost looked like a tornado in a way. Or more like a funnel.
It looked like the Super Friends Justice League thing, cartoon telepathic thing that Aquaman did. That's what it looked like.
Wow, that's harsh.
That's a deep pull.
Another thing I thought was harsh. Well, not harsh. Yeah, okay, harsh. Because it made Renee look like a fool, which part of me liked, is during the final confrontation at the theater. And I know I'm jumping ahead, but Black Siren eventually does her cry and everybody scatters. But what got me was how easily Anatoly was able to grab Curtis and then take Renee's gun, shoot Renee, and then get away. I'm like, that's harsh. But in a way, I liked it.
One of his two guns. He has two guns, so he was shooting back with his second gun. But yeah, that was good. I want to talk about the action in this episode because it was good, okay action, meaning I didn't have shaky cam. I hate shaky cam. This is personal critique of mine, but it was good action. But you could definitely tell that they were stunt people, especially when the Canaries were going at each other. You can never see their face. They're wigs were always in their hair. They were moving around. They were just doing wonderful actual combat, but you could tell it was not the actual actors, and you could tell when they cut to bring the actors in. And that was true across the board for all the scenes in this entire episode. So while I did enjoy the actual action, it was really apparent to me that it was all stuntmen.
Which was a disappointment because earlier in the season when you had Dinah and Black Siren fight, it was actually more of the actors. So you do have a good point there.
It might have been contractual that they personally wanted to kill each other so they could never really have them in a combat scene because you never know when a kick's going to go wrong, right?
Exactly.
I'm joking, by the way. I have no idea about the personal relationship of the two.
So the reason why we get to the theater, I think we just need to get into the episode because the theater is, it's been what, 7 days that the city's been under siege, no federal help. No calling Wally and the Flash and Vibe to evacuate everybody.
But wait.
Hold on, I'm getting there.
Okay,
like good. Your idea from last week. Instead of having them evacuate the city, which would make sense, instead Oliver calls the Flash to get him and Diggle to stop Caden James to go out of the city because they're like, looky at our tablet. We've got proof that I didn't kill your son. And that's how they use the Flash in this episode. And it's like, really?
How did they get back into the city after that?
They weren't out of the city. He was heading on his way out.
Yeah, he was on the road on the way out of Star City.
But how did they get back? The Flash took them there, and then Kate and James drove away.
They walked. They hoofed it back.
Showed a little leg, hitchhike.
I mean, because neither of them actually have, like, actual money on them, so they can't even call, like, Lyft or Uber.
The Green Arrow uses Uber.
You can have a credit card on file for Uber.
Yeah, but they don't have their cell phone with them. They just have their comms.
You don't think that Overwatch put, like, a little cell phone thingy in their comm thingy?
I'm pretty sure that doesn't exist.
But it's Overwatch. It's really interesting that they call to have Flash bring them there, and then Caden drives away, and I could just see them look at each other going, do you think we could call Flash again for him to take us back to the Arrow Cave? And Dougal going, probably not, man. That might not be a good idea. And Oliver's like, so wait a minute, man. We got to walk? Yeah, we got to walk. And I have these lights in my helmet so we can definitely see our way back to the Arrow Cave.
I have little headlights. That's what Spartan's helmet's been all along. In case you need to walk home in the dark, you have headlights.
But the nice thing is, at least Diggle didn't puke this time when Wally carried him.
That's right. They're inconsistent with it. Yeah.
He's getting better.
So the whole speedster thing, it's almost believable because Barry, spoilers, is out of prison this week. So I can kind of see how he could have been available. And of course, there's Wally. He might have been available too, or any of the other speedsters. All right. But the music definitely indicated it was actually Flash that did it. Yeah, I specifically talked about this last week about why don't they call anybody else. Michelle, you mentioned like they should have a superhero Google Hangout that they all call each other when they have something that they might need each other for or something like that. Well, it's good that this happened, but at the same time, why now? Why not before? Is it just because Michelle has magically advised these people to get on Google Hangouts that this happened this week?
Yeah. So they get there, they show Caden the tablet. Caden's like, oh yes, this information is true. You've got to bring my colleagues to this theater alive so I can figure out who is the one that actually killed my son. And, oh gosh, this episode. What gets me is, first off, Caden James has Anatoly, Laurel, and Richard in a room and says, okay, stay by your phones. I'm going to call you when the airlift is ready. And then there's this scene, Richard Dragon's like, you know what? I'm going to leave. I don't think our airlift's coming. And that's my first question. Do we think Caden gives this great speech of thank you for helping me bring justice for my son. And this is lucrative. I will give you the money. Do you think he was actually telling the truth?
I had the same question, Michelle, and there's no way to prove it one way or another at this point in time. And remember that Dragon is supposed to be this accomplished hacker right now. So even if Hayden had ordered a few choppers for everybody, that Dragon could have on ordered them, canceled them, basically. So you never know what's going on at this point in time. However, I do want to point out at this point in time, poor Anatoly, not only was he telling the truth, basically, with Oliver, and that he did not out him, he did not provide the photograph, he did not do the fake video. Not only that, but he's been in Star City how long? Like 5-6 months? And he was supposed to get some of that $70 million of ransom money from the city. He's not getting paid now, because Caden James gave that account back over to Oliver. So all the money that Oliver paid is coming back to the city, and none of it is going to Anatoly. So, oh, poor Anatoly. He did all that work for absolutely nothing, and now he's got to go back to Russia and go to the Bratva with nothing in hand. And he's lost how many dozens of men in this endeavor? So it's not been a good day for Anatoly.
Chris, what do you think of Caden and his possible promise to his colleagues?
They've always presented Caden as being fairly honorable for as twisted as he's become around his son's death. So I'd like to think his intent was to save the Remember, especially with Laurel this season. He's not been, for lack of a better term, hating her, indicating that she's just a tool he plans to discard, but more teaching lessons while he does things. So I like to think that he had a plan in place, that there was actually something that was going to come to save them, but who knows how much time had passed and how close we were to things. For all we know, it could have only been like 20 minutes have passed and they're feeling antsy when really the plane or whatever or the chopper was supposed to arrive an hour from then. I don't know. But like I said, I think the way his character is, you want to believe he'd be honorable enough to do that.
Eventually, everybody gets to the theater where Caden is like, who actually killed my son? And Laurel is like, it's me.
I got a beef with this.
Yes, Chris. Laurel, no matter what version, she's obviously your favorite. So, Chris, yes, take this away.
I don't mind Black Siren terribly because she's supposed to be twisted, evil, and weird. I don't like the plot around her where everyone seems to think at times that, oh, she's Laurel. We love Laurel. No, no, this is Laurel from Earth 2, who's a hardened criminal. Get over yourselves. My biggest beef here is how in the blue hell did she know that getting close to Caden James's detonator was going to scramble the metahuman power inhibitor that she had around her neck to make her powerful again? How did she know?
The dragon told her.
When?
Whenever. I mean, he's pulling all the strings now, right? It was one of the multitude of things that has happened off screen so far this year that we have never seen to bring the dragon to power. And he's been doing this all along. He's been the one that's been stringing her along.
But she looked surprised.
She's a great actor. She's Chris's favorite actor.
But she rips it off and she went, well, this is interesting.
Well, yeah, because she's doing the comic villain thing and she's really hamming it up.
What's the play then? Why do you really be like, well, I killed your son? Is it because of some misguided belief to save someone? Come on, I don't think there's that kernel of goodness in Black Siren, despite them being like, oh, there's a little bit of Laurel we know in there. No, that's horse crap. If you go and look at my notes, it says in there, this Black Siren arc is dumb, and I capitalized dumb in full caps and underlined it.
I have a beef with this too, but go ahead, Chris.
It just doesn't make sense. It was a convenient way to give her powers back to continue this arc that had no grounding in anything else that hadn't been set up.
Because plot!
Yeah, she gets shot.
Maybe I'm just being too critical on this whole the power inhibitor collar magically doesn't work in the presence of the detonator, but come on! Come on, that's dumb!
She gets shot again. And so Chris... When we're talking about this redemption plot, where does Laurel end up?
Well, Quentin's got her and has taken her somewhere, which, again, is baffling to me. I understand this dude is jacked up because both his daughters have died at different times, even though one got resurrected. But come on! You must have a couple screws loose, or maybe he really has just gone nuts because of everything that's happened to try and equate Black Siren to Laurel Lance, that he knew, his daughter. Come on, the picture show last week trying to be like, I want to reach you. No! It's dumb. She's a hardened criminal. She's killed tons of people. She's laughed about it. She's had fun with it. It's not your kid. And it really irks me because everyone falls in this hole in here. And Dinah was right at one point when she's like, she's got the wool pulled over all your eyes. Because at different points in there, everyone's like, oh, she's kind of like Laurel. I don't get it. I think it's weak. I think it's dumb. I understand they wanted to bring the actor back. I understand they wanted to do something with Black Siren. That's awesome. But this is just such a waste.
You have finally snapped. Took a few years longer than I thought.
Yeah.
You can apply that same thing to Quentin. What I said was Anatoly's quote to Oliver Queen on the building rooftop when he's taking him from the hotel. But the same thing could be stated towards Quentin. I have a big beef about this because despite everybody saying that she is not the same person, oh, but there's a little bit in there that is her. I just completely just, Chris, you said it great. I'm not going to reiterate everything, but yeah, I have a beef with it too. And I hope that they course correct the next episode that we get because right now I'm just not feeling this whole arc. I don't like it.
But they haven't course corrected this whole arc all season. All season.
You listen to last episode. That's basically what I said.
They're just bought into this. I don't know when it's going to stop until she eventually kills Quentin or something like that. I think, okay, I don't know if that'll happen because she's got that whole, oh, he looks like my dad aspect, but something's got to happen at some point that finally makes her irredeemable in Quentin's eyes and the rest of Team Arrow. She's obviously irredeemable in Dinah's eyes, but remember, Dinah never knew Laurel, so she doesn't care. She's not blinded by these misguided feelings.
I've been saying for 6 years, and you've been saying it for quite a while, that Paul Blackthorne, we love him. He's a great actor, But we've been saying his character, Quint Lance, has got to die at some point in time. We've been predicting his death for 6 years. I think we might actually get it this year.
I think it's a mercy killing if they kill him off this season, because they've just made Quentin Lance so dumb at times this season.
Now, speaking of dumb, William wasn't as, you know, sure of, you know, hey, Dad, if you die, that's okay, because I have Felicity. Because in this episode, Oliver brings William to the Arrow Cave because that's safer than the Argus safe house from before, because the bomb's going to go off. And William's like, you told me that you were going to tell me the truth. What's going on? And Oliver's like, yo, there's a bomb. We could all die. And this, of course, makes William scared. And he does what any scared child would do. He would go grab his Flash backpack and somehow walk, Uber his way to the theater where all the bad guys are together. What?
Yeah, okay. I've got a huge issue with the way TV has been using kids in the last couple of years. And this is just a big shining example of it. Look, the city is under siege. The bomb could go off, like the bomb that's going to destroy the whole city is going to go off. The safest place to be is in the Arrow Cave. And by the way, the Arrow Cave has door locks with surveillance around it. I know how much time it gets broken into, but William ain't a super villain. It's easy to determine if and when he leaves. And he just leaves in the middle of everything. Nobody notices with those three great women in the Arrow Cave. Athena was actually the most astute about everything, but you also had Felicity there and you had Thea there. And between the three of them, they just let him go. Come on. And then the kid gets in the middle of this whole thing and he shouldn't have been there at all. And just last episode, wasn't he saying, okay, Dad, it's cool. I got it. Between Felicity and Ryza, I don't need you. And then all of a sudden he's like, Dad, I'm so scared. I need you. I'm sorry. It's very inconsistent. Write kids better on TV, please, because this is bugging me. This kid should not have been sneaking around the way he was.
Because the first thing I did when I was a kid and was scared was sneak out of the safe place that I was taken to by my parents.
Imagine if there's a tornado approaching and you're in the basement of the house. Are you going to run out and go, oh, I'm so scared. I need to find my teddy in the top floor of the house. No, you're going to stay in the basement because there's a tornado coming.
Yeah, well, he did find an arrow. I thought that was really cute. He found an arrow and Anthea was like, give that to me. Don't play with that. Yeah, but William being there, now hold on. It led to this whole touching moment between him and Oliver. And Oliver's like, look at me, William. I love you. Basically, we're going to die together. Isn't that cool? But then Caden James was all like, oh my goodness. I'm a father. I was a father. I should have protected my son. Now, SP, I believe you have offspring, correct?
That is correct. Whether I want to admit it or not. Yes. I do.
So how did you feel about Caden all of a sudden remembering that?
Oh, I have kids. Yeah. Or I had kids and he wouldn't approve of me and that sort of stuff. Well, I think Dragon says it most succinctly to him in the holding cell. You know, afterwards, you're the smartest guy in the room and you didn't see it coming. So, yeah, the Harold Finch, which is Michael Emerson's character over on Person of Interest, is basically the same character, put a little slight different twist on it. I just don't see that character going as nuts as he did and as hellbent on revenge as he did. So that was kind of a stretch for me, probably because of the Person of Interest background. But I just don't see him flipping the switch going full-born, I am going to wipe out a city because somebody killed you sort of thing. I just don't see that in his character. That really wasn't his character behind how he started Helix and what he was doing behind Helix. Oh, and by the way, the whole thing over Owen, oh, Dad, you're not telling me what I do at work. Yeah, guess what, kid? You're not going to know, or you're not going to understand what goes on in your parents' work. That's because your parents' work is an adult thing and you are in high school playing basketball. Sorry, Dad doesn't have to tell you everything that happens at work too. That's just a little aside thing, but yeah, Caden James going as nuts as he did over Owen's death. yes, I could see that, but wanting to kill the entire city over it? No, I don't see that at all.
It's just another moment in this episode's frustrating. It's the fact that William's there for the final fight just because it enables them to do the plot device if Caden begins to revisit things because he sees a father and son together. Oh, come on. Come on. We know security is bad getting into the Arrow Cave. It shouldn't be that bad going out of the Arrow Cave also. How does no one realize that William's gone? I know we touched on this, but he didn't need to be there for this.
Yeah, those women are more capable of that. They would know. Ugh.
I mean, Thea's an assassin. Assassins are trained to have situational awareness of the environment around them, which would include a little kid escaping.
Yeah. And talk about somebody who's actually capable, but for some reason the writers decided to forget. And that's Diggle. During the fight with Dragon.
You mean the D?
Wrong D, Haas.
Yeah. So Dragon's got the chain, Spartan's doing his thing. And then he gets Dragon down. And then for some reason, oh, let me turn my back on the bad guy to go get a gun, even though I'm Spartan and there's a chain. And I could have taken care of it right then and there.
Yeah. Because plot. Again. Yeah.
Oh. So, Chris. We had the crybabies. They were involved. What did you think of them as helpers?
In the grand scheme of things, they're one of the things that annoyed me the least in this episode. But I'm not sure that that means much, really.
Yeah, it's saying something, actually, because we've all had issues with them since they left Team Arrow.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be overly negative, but there's just so much stuff that seemed like it was just convenient, and for convenience sake, and because we want to have this moment. So it didn't come off well. Them being in here, at least they were portrayed the same as they have been for the last few episodes, which is, I understand sort of their point of view, but I don't understand why they haven't been able to get over it yet, because let's go back to season one. Diggle surveys Moira when Oliver tells him not to. Oliver bugs Diggle, but they all get over it.
It's a new generation that's just not getting over it. It's the millennials, man.
It's those damn millennials. They just don't get it.
I do have something to say about Athena, though. So she's brought back in the last couple of episodes.
You mean Felicity, too?
You mean Elena?
Excuse me, Elena. I thought it was Athena. Elena's brought back, and she's doing some amazing stuff of calling out things, and they're either listening to her or not, and she's got this incredible hacking background, and she was there for the flashbacks with Caden James, which is so great. So I got to thinking, she could actually, in this episode, she could have been the one that doctored the photo that changed the video, and she still could be, by the way, on Dragon's payroll. So one of two things, I thought that she could have been the mole the entire time, or she could still be the mole. I mean, she could have been the one, the puppeteer pulling the strings, or she could be the mole underneath Dragon, which will prove an interesting plot point eventually, because she has full access to both teams at this point in time. So this is going to be interesting going on. Or she could just be the Felicity 2 goody-goody helper, since the Mr. Terrific is gone. At his own crybaby, Arrow Cave, whatever we're going to call it. So I think that that is probably the best point of this episode, because I couldn't tell the entire time if she was going to go bad or she was good. If she was bad, if she was good. At the end of the episode, I still don't know. It was a very well done. So writers, if you have played the long game with us on this, bravo, because I can't tell either way.
Yeah, that's fair.
Do we think Anatoly is in or out with Diaz?
Out for now, not to say that he won't become in later. I don't imagine that he was aware that Diaz was pulling the strings, because if you're the evil megalomaniac who's trying to do everything, you don't tell other people ahead of time that, hey, I'm going to do this and I'm really screwing with Caden James. You should know this so that you can be on my team later. It's too big a risk. Because remember, Anatoly needs money real bad for the Bratva. If it looks like he can get paid to work with Richard Dragon, I'm sure he's going to get brought in. The question is, does Dragon think he needs Anatoly?
It really depends on if he can get out of the country or not, or if they want him back in Russia at this point or not. Like, he might have to come back with a substantial amount of cash to pay for his time that he's wasted away in America, in Star City. I'm assuming it's America, not Canada, but I guess it could be either. Anyway, North America versus Russia. So I think that it's going to be really telling. I wouldn't be surprised to see him again. As a matter of fact, his reaction and the trust that was either completely broken this episode or regained a little bit because of his truthful statement that he did not doctor the photo or did not provide it to anybody and he did not doctor the video. I think that might mean something down the road, but it was that little interaction with them between Oliver Queen and Anatoly was enough to bring me back to where their relationship should be. So we'll see where it goes in the future.
And I want to talk about the Diaz and Caden Jane scene. Just on an acting standpoint, I really liked being able to see those two actors in a room doing the best that they could with the material that they were given with.
Kirk and Michael Emerson?
Yeah. The way they were just able to look at each other, Michael slowly realizing that, oh my goodness, I've been played. There's something going on. I love that line where he's just like, this isn't a rescue attempt, is it?
Well, and he held out hope, and there's nothing that he could have done. He was chained to the table, but he held out hope that Dragon was there to actually pull off a rescue. Obviously, the cameras were off, so that was an opening. So it was either going to go one or two ways. I think Caden understood that at that point in time. And we also understand that Caden was divorced. I don't know if that was brought out before in the series or not. I don't remember it, but obviously now she's with Jim, whoever Jim is, and his ex-wife. And that he is divorced. So he really had nothing left. I mean, Owen was gone. He wasn't married. He had no woman in his life unless you want to count Elena. And I don't think that it was ever going to be a thing. So yeah, I think he knew that this was going to be, it is sad though, that the two thing I was thinking about this. And as I rewatched the episode for a second time, that he wanted to see his son's game and the feds wouldn't let him, which in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that he should have been allowed. You know, when you're being arrested by the feds, you don't get to stay and watch the game. You have to go. And he didn't get to see his son's grave either. So it was kind of sad in that aspect. So I don't know if that's enough to pull you back into sympathy for this guy who was going to kill tens of thousands of people with a mega bomb. But, you know, it was a sad time.
I think it was more just to show you how much he kind of lost it when his son died. I mean, he was fairly reasonable. I mean, even the way Michael Emerson even played it, he sounded different before his son died and things like that. I think this was more just to illustrate the death of his son really just knocked him off the rails.
True. Any last thoughts about this episode? Anything you think we missed? Chris?
I don't like episodes where I come out going, I really didn't like this episode. This was one of those episodes. I really hope that they can rally and bring it back on point in March. It didn't work for me. And I know that's not a great way to describe it, but that's just the best way to do it because nothing really hit home for me. Everything was kind of like, okay, I guess. I don't know. Am I being too critical?
No, it's been 2 weeks with that for me right now. And I'm wondering if I'm being too critical because I really like the people that have been involved in the show, both as for actors and as the creative team. So I don't want to seem like I'm being too critical, but the storyline as it's is right now, like last week, I was big into, well, we're almost done with the season and we're not even to the big bad yet. And now we see who the big bad is. I'm like, wow, we could have done a better job of bringing him in. So you're right, Chris. He comes back in March. We've got, what, two and a half months left of episodes that hopefully are good. And it's a good string of episodes to bring us out of the show. Possibly this could be the last few episodes of the show, so we'll see how it goes. One last thing that I had on this episode that we've talked about many, many times before, but I just feel obligated to point out is the fact that, let's see, Caden James knew his team was compromised with the vigilante, and knowing that, deliberately moved his headquarters away from where it was. I think Team Arrow needs to take a note from this. When anybody new learns about their location, they might need to find another place for the Arrow Cave. Just pointing that out.
But sets are expensive, SP.
Okay, so get yourself like a Winnebago or something that can move around.
Like Ant-Man?
Yeah, like Ant-Man. It would be great.
I think the creative team was trying to do pods, divide the season into two main arcs. I'll have to say is writers, you did not do your homework, because if you want to see that be successfully done, you need to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They are doing a very good job of that. They did a good job of that last season. They did a good job of it this season because they ended their first pod. They wrapped that the main stuff up, but we know there's more story going on. For this, it's like, okay, we have this big bad. And you're right. When did he find the time to do all of this? How was he able to work behind Caden James' back when Caden James figured out about Vince and had surveillance on him and everything like that? Yeah, they need to rally and stick the landing. Well,
I've heard that quite a bit this year.
Yeah. Well, they do have a break for a couple of weeks. Arrow comes back March 1st. So we are going to continue our discussion on Legends of Tomorrow. So next week, we're going to be discussing Legends of Tomorrow Season 3, Episode 2, Freak Show. It originally aired October 17, 2017. The Legends attempt to fix the anachronism in 1870 that happens to be P.T. Barnum's Circus, directed by Kevin Tankeron and writers Kido Shimizu and Grain Godfrey.
I can't wait. It's going to be fun. Chris, you're all ramped up for this?
I am, actually. I'm excited.
All right. As long as you're ramped up about that, let's get ramped up about the news. And we're going to go to the main news desk. Live from floor 52 of the Starling Tribune on Earth 2, we're at the main newsroom, and we're going to talk about all the great fun stories, the plethora, the dozens of stories that came out this past week about the DCCW universe. Michelle, take it away.
The one story we have this week is about Legends of Tomorrow. Entertainment Weekly spoke to executive producer Mark Guggenheim. He revealed that Malice, who's the big bad this season, will be a fully CG character. Wally comes part of the team because he feels like he doesn't fit anywhere, and he will be brought in by Rip Hunter. And Snart does eventually leave the team, but Guggenheim has said he is not dying.
Oh, thank gosh.
Which is great, because I cannot take another Snart death.
It would be impossible to outdo that first one, first of all. Second of all, he's already died once. Let's not make him die again, because he's needed back at the Earth X.
Exactly. So I just can't wait. Apparently, he's going to have a good moment, help some people heal, and then leave when the moment is right, because that's Leo Snart.
That is indeed. Chris, what do you think about Leo here?
I like him, and I like the fact that they're not going to kill him. While Wentworth Miller might not be coming back to the role, at least they can have him out there. You could always have him appear in an animated form of some kind, even if he doesn't talk. So, he's not dead. I can't handle another Snart death, just like Michelle said.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could even show just a graphic of the cold gun, right? And maybe the goggles at some point in time. And it wouldn't have to be him. Could be somebody that's costumed up, but at least we would know. He'd be around, maybe like with a wave and a smirk smile. That would be great. All right, Michelle, what else you got for us this week? We got a couple more dozen to go through, right?
No, that's the story of the week.
That is the story. In all fairness to Michelle, she has scoured the interwebs and he has found many, many stories, but none related to this DCCW comic universe. So that is the one story for this week. We hope it satiates you, listener, and we look forward to more great stuff next week if the Olympics don't get in the way. So we'll see about that. In the meantime, let's move on to some feedback. What do you got for us this week?
Well, we have a Twitter exchange. We posted on Twitter our podcast episode on Divided, and we at James Banford.
Because he was the director of the episode.
He replied, very entertaining, thanks, folks. And then SP, you said, thanks for all the great action and bringing the world of Green Arrow to our screens for the past 6 years. He replied with a folding hands emoji and a heart emoji. And oh yeah, he followed us.
Woohoo! Bam, bam. It's great to have you on board. Thank you very much. And if you ever want on the show, and we realize that you have contractual obligations, but if you ever want on the show, go ahead and hit us up. We will have you on the show. So thank you very much for checking out our show. We really appreciate that, especially on a show that I wasn't on, because we know those are the best shows ever.
No, like I said, the cast and the crew, the directors are doing a great job on Arrow. That is not our complaints at all. We're still trying to figure out what Miracle and Guggenheim, what the big plan is and what's going on in the writer's room. That's, I think, our frustration comes in. At least that's where my frustration comes in.
Exactly.
Indeed. We also have another great feedback, don't we, Michelle?
Yeah, it looks like we have a voicemail.
We have a voice. Why didn't anybody tell me? We have a voicemail?
Oops.
We have a voicemail.
Well, let's see if I can't. I think I have a button here with something on it. Here, let's see what we got.
Hey, everybody. Steven John Drew here from Gonna Geek, network owner and general fan of Arrow and the Starling Tribune. Keep up the great work that you're doing over here on this show. It's lots of fun to listen to. I just wanted to send in a clip that I've been meaning to send for a little while now, and it's about B Team Arrow or Team Arrow B or the anti-Arrow, whatever we want to call them. Can we just talk about the fact that they are constantly telling Oliver and the gang that they're doing their own thing? Doesn't matter what the situation is. It's like, oh, we got to make sure we got to tell them straight up. We're still doing our own thing, Hoss. It doesn't matter who it is. They're constantly speaking this. I think the fact that you have your own headquarters, the fact that you have moved on, they know that they're doing their own thing. I think that they're quite aware that you have left. I believe we don't need to say this again. And it's like, Renee, of all people, should not be able to say that line because he was the one that caused all of this problems. And when we analyze it a little bit more, it's absolutely ridiculous the fact that now Renee and Curtis are trusting everybody when Dinah's off doing her own thing, trying to get revenge. Yet they have no problem staying together as their trio. That whole trio is a mess. And if they could just stop saying, well, we're doing our own thing, it would make a lot better writing on TV. And it's frustrating for me every time I see that. It's like, where are you going to say it today? Oh, wait, when are you going to say it again? You said it in the first 5 minutes. And for me, the really sad part is that it's ruined one of the best new characters to come to Arrow in recent years. And that's Wild Dog, right? Like, he had such a good backstory, and I wasn't sold on him until that backstory. He was fairly level-headed, and a lot of times what he was saying kind of made sense. Now we look at this and he doesn't see the hypocrisy within his actions right now. So anyways, to me, it's a shame and I wish they would just start not putting that line in there. just stop. Just stop putting that line in there. We're doing our own thing. Well, we're doing our own thing. Yeah, just stop. Anyways, keep up the great work over here. Love the Starling Tribune.
Okay, for you audio listeners, I guess you didn't tell, in the middle of the voicemail, I made up my own drinking game every time. He said, we're doing our own thing. I took a drink. So there is for you audio listeners, go over and catch the video over on YouTube and you can see the drinking game in action. Of course, it's with coffee rather than alcohol, but I encourage you to use alcohol if you can. So another thing I have to tell you, Stephen, thank you very much for your voicemail, but we feel like we need to go our own way. We don't trust you anymore. So Hoss, at this point in time, we have to say goodbye. So bye, Hoss.
Toodaloo, Hoss.
Yeah, and I'm going to be Curtis and just nod. That scene where Renee, where he says, we're still doing our own thing, man. And Curtis is just sitting there nodding along. I guess Renee's the leader? I mean, when did that happen? Why does anybody trust him? I know I talked about this last week.
It's all up to popular vote, remember?
Yep. It's supposed to be by consensus every time.
Which is why this time, this week, when they don't have Dinah's back, because last week she was like, you know, thank you for having my back when I wanted to go do this thing, because they're all supposed to stick together, the three musketeers, crybabies, whatever. And now they're like, no, Dinah, you cannot be all vengeful and blah, blah, blah. Even though my name's Wild Dog and I take guns and I shoot people.
Unless somebody else takes your guns and shoots back at you.
Oh, I know. And to me, this is ruining Dinah. I loved how they were building up Dinah to be a leader within the team. Her relationship with Diggle, the friendship, men and women can be friends. It's possible. That's gone. I'll be happy if they all go and we can actually get more screen time for Diggle. Because that's another thing that's frustrating me. But we are coming to the end of our show. It's time to move into the network promotion. Isn't that right, Chris?
That's right, Michelle. It's a friendly reminder. We like to remind you guys each week that the Starling Tribune is, in fact, part of a network of shows that you can find over at GunnaGeek.com. There are 25-plus different shows in the network that cover a variety of topics. We've got things like tabletop gaming, or other shows like ourselves that are just focused on one specific aspect of geekdom, such as the Arrow universe. We've got a ton of stuff there, and we have to tell you about one of those shows each week. Something new, give you a taste of something else, say, you guys might like this. And this week, we're going to talk about the Pop Culture Cosmos Cast, episode 48 of The Multiverse. We're counting down the Marvel movies with our thoughts on each one as we lead into Black Panther, as we bring you the latest news and trends in pop culture right here on the Pop Culture Cosmos Show, which you can listen to today on the Gunna Geek Network. So hey, if you're getting excited for Black Panther and you're ready for the countdown as it goes, head on over to the Pop Culture Cosmos, check out Multiverse number 48, and you can find out their thoughts and feelings on all of the Marvel movies as we get towards Black Panther. Less than a week away, guys.
4 days. I'm not counting or anything.
Not that he's counting or anything. So, a big thank you to everyone who participated in the chat over at Geeks.live. We had a bustling chat room today, so thank you so much, everyone. And also, a big thank you to everyone who downloads the video at a later date or downloads the episode over at StarlingTribune.com.
And remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on most Sundays. Also, you can find all of our past shows and check out our forums or our blogs on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And we would love to hear from you. We are the Starly Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starly Tribune on Twitter. And you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Anatoly needs to get paid.
At Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Hoss.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag need more diggle. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.